Hey there, this is John Millen. I'm going to talk about an asset class I think everyone should at least look at. And the asset class I'm going to talk about on this short intro session. And then if you want to learn more, there's four or five other sessions here on the platform, on the podcast. It's called Banking Yourself with different pieces. You can dig a little deeper, but I wanted to give like a intro. And then if you want to learn more, great. Why am I doing this? This isn't really related to benefits or employee benefit packages. Even though I'm a licensed life insurance agent, even though I'm certified to design these types of contracts, and even though I own two of them and have for 14 years now, I don't want you coming to me to build these for you. Although I could, I will refer you to someone that does them for me because they do this every day. My goal is just to educate you. Like, this is a great thing that people just don't know about. And I didn't know about it either. But when I started learning about it, I was bombarded with that's dumb, that's stupid. No. From my own dad, from Susie Orman and Dave Ramsey and, you know, friends that sold life insurance, and I didn't know what I was talking about. So I was asking, like, what do you think of this? And then they were like, oh, that's a horrible idea. I almost stopped. But it had been in 2010 when I first started learning about this, and that 2009, 2010, the stock market had dropped in 2008. Remember that? 40, 50% drop. And I was so mad. Because I had all my assets in one bucket, which was stocks. So I had 401k, tanked. I had mutual funds, tanked. I had four or five of those, tanked. Like I had all my wealth. I had a little bit of equity in my home, which really shouldn't count your primary home as that wealth because you're living there. So I had all my assets in something that dropped without my control. And then when I come to learn what happened afterwards, that was probably by design. And, you know, what happened after, like, that should make you mad. Like, wait a minute. I'm not going to put all my hopes and dreams into one bucket. That makes no sense, especially when you don't have any control. Most people don't have control. So I went looking. Where else can I put money? Well, I had a business, right? So building value of my business, I've been doing that. That's an asset. You have gold and silver. That's an asset. You have artwork. That's an asset. If it's high value artwork, Bitcoin, maybe that's an asset. You have commercial real estate. That's definitely an asset. Annuities, that might be an asset. So you have these different buckets, right? But I had everything in one. So I'm like, I need to find something that's safe, that's secure, that I don't lose money. Buffett said, rule of number one, don't lose money. And I've come to learn that the hard way, like at 56 years old. Sometimes in life, you have to lose money to gain the wisdom to not do it again. Because I always knew when I was younger, like, oh, you can be, you know, my dad was like, oh, you can be aggressive on the mutual funds. You can be aggressive buying stocks. It's okay. Yeah, it's okay to buy AOL stock at the peak and then watch it drop. Or how about gold or silver at $50 an ounce? Yeah, that was fun. Sometimes you need that experience. And then I woke up, I'm like, I'm tired of working hard and having things just disappear. I want to build it on solid ground. I want an asset that's not like crazy 50% annual returns, which is very hard to get. I want something secure and stable, safe to store my wealth that grows and protected and has that I can use it while I'm living. And that's what whole life contracts do. These contracts is a separate asset class. So in your brain, like, I got this other bucket. Okay. These contracts, who are they with? They are with not the government. They are with very old, conservative, financially stable companies called life insurance companies. Most of them are mutual life insurance companies, meaning they're owned by the members. They're not stock. And you're going to learn these differences, but these are companies that have been around for 150, 160 years, some of them 200 years. And not all life insurance companies are the same. And you'll learn this later. So, okay, there's this handful of companies that you really want to look at, and you'll learn that later. Doesn't matter now. Doesn't even matter if you've never heard of them. The company that I have my policies with, I had never heard of the company. And that was my first thing to Jeff. I'm like, Jeff, I've never heard of this company. He's like, that's so? Here, look at them. They've been around 160 years. Their Comdex rating is massively high, which means they're very stable. What else do you want to know? I'm like, okay. Like, I guess nothing, because they've been around 160 years. And they pay dividends and all these other things for every single year. So there's these solid companies that you're sticking your wealth in. That's important for me. I don't want to lose it. I don't want 30% annual gains, but I want some gains and I want some protection. I want to be able to use it. So you're putting your money in these contracts that are guaranteed to pay out certain ways that have certain features you can add to them. And this is where the magic of infinite banking, bank on yourself, privatized banking, Nelson Nash, you hear all these things. It's not just buying a permanent whole life insurance policy, because they're very different. For instance, I sell whole life policies as an employee benefit through a couple of different companies to employees. Those policies are not designed the same way these banking policies are that I have personally. They have a different need. In the employee benefit market, those policies are designed to have permanence and to say, look, when you pass away, here's a $25,000 policy that will be paid out to pay for your final expenses, for your funeral, for your kids, or a $100,000 policy that will automatically pay out. You paid the money in, and it will always pay out, and it'll pay out more than you put in. That's the trade. Like, that's a pretty good trade. Versus renting insurance, which is term, which you put all the money in, you never get it out. You never actually get the benefit of what you've paid for. Both are good. They have different reasons. One is not better than the other. Renting is not better than buying. Buying is not better than renting. Term is not better than whole. Whole is, right? It depends on the use. I have term and whole. That's the best use. High protection when you're working, longevity when you need it later. So you combine them. That's the key. So you build these contracts with someone that is a more of a brain surgeon than a general practitioner. So they know when they're operating on a pituitary gland exactly the right things to do. That's the best way I can explain it. Most life insurance agents are not brain surgeon agents. They're general practitioners. So you got to make sure you're talking to someone that knows what they're doing, because otherwise they will build you a policy that doesn't work. That's really sad. So you just make sure you get referred and you ask questions when you talk to people, like, why is that, Jeff? Why is that, Jeff? Why? I had so many questions from my agent 15 years ago, ridiculous number of questions. And he very honestly and very truthfully and very common sense wise told me the answer. I'm like, huh, this is cool. Like, someone's just giving me the straight truth, the good and the bad and the ugly, because there's always some ugly. So he's like, this is a good, bad, and ugly. I'm like, oh, okay, I can live with that. So you build the policy, these contracts, you're putting your money in it in different ways. You're paying premiums, you're putting extra money, you have special riders, and it grows, it's protected, and you can take this money out, you use it for college, for retirement. We've used it for our business, for loans, and the cool thing about when it's your money, so when you hear bank on yourself, the contract, you own the contract, right, as a person, and it's your money. And so when you take money out of your own asset, it's like your own bank. That's kind of where the phrase is. It's not like a real bank. It's not Wells Fargo, but it's your money. And which means you go to your family bank. So we call ours the Millen Family Bank. I go, hey, I need 10 grand from the family bank to invest in my business for a lead generation cold calling company. They're going to call leads. And I think with 10 grand, I'm going to be able, over the course of 1 year or 2 years, close one account that'll pay me more than 10 grand. That's a pretty good trade. So I'll do it. So I take the money out of my bank. And the cool thing is, I can pay it back or not pay it back. It's my bank. I own it. So you have this amazing amount of control. You want to buy a car. You want to go on a vacation. You have something breaking your home. You have this money that you control that's growing and protected. You want to use it for long-term care. You want to use it for college tuition. This is a good one. What if I save for my kids? How do I save for my kids' college tuition? Right, when I'm 40, and at that point, I haven't had kids yet, but I was thinking I hopefully will, but no kids, age 40, married, like, okay, we're going to eventually have college, potentially college, which is really getting more expensive. And what if they want to go to vet school or med school or something more expensive? And my dad, when I was growing up, said, hey, I will pay for whatever college you want to go to. Now, he didn't say it to me that way when I was younger. I learned this later. And so I wasn't a spoiled bratty kid that's like, oh, I want to go to Harvard, because I wouldn't have gotten into Harvard. But he told me late afterwards, he made it a goal with all three, from my two sisters and myself, that he would, whatever it took, whatever we needed, he would pay for it. He would find a way that was so cool to learn that later. Like, wow, I want to do that for my kids. And that doesn't mean they're going to be like, oh, you get to go to Princeton and I'm going to pay for everything because, you know, you may not get into Princeton. But whatever it takes. Okay, I'm doing a 529 plan. That seems to be the best thing. But it's in the stock market. So it's in one asset class that goes up and down. Like, oh, man, what if I... And then what if they don't need it? What if they want to go into the military? And then I gotta use it for... I had to use it for education. Like, I have to... I just can't pull it out without penalties and all these other things. So now I've penalized this bank that you create, this money, this big pot of money that you're going to be able to accumulate and won't ever go down in value. It always goes up in value. That's the other thing you're going to learn. That's, how is that possible? Because it's a contractual relationship with an old company with lots of assets. And it's just the way it is when you see it. All right. I get this pile of money. I do what I want. So when they're ready for college, I go, hey, do you want to go to college? Do you want to go to welding school? Do you want to go to the military? Maybe you started a business and they're an entrepreneur. I don't know what's going to happen. That's a long time from now. So I have the money. They can pull it out and then they can pay the family bank back. Because guess who's going to own the family bank when mom and dad are gone? The kids. You're going to pay the family bank back because it'll eventually be your bank and your money and your asset. Because it's got a death benefit. It's going to pay out a couple $1 million when we die. So then, you know, you have that piece, that asset and that peace of mind. What about retirement? All right, I got to save for college and retirement at the same time. Yeah, that's fun. Wait a minute. I have this pile of money. Then I can use it for both or whatever I need. What about a business? I can also use the money as I'm growing that I put in and it's protected and I can use it for business. So that's where this bank on yourself concept, it's your money and you control it. I will tell you a recent story where this really kicked in for me. This whole time that I've had these, you read about how you can walk into a dealership, pull money out of your policy and pay cash. And then you pay yourself back to your own bank, whatever interest you want. There's a minimal interest rate that you always have to pay, but you're kind of paying yourself. So it's a wash, but you can charge yourself more. But the interest that you would have been paying the car company goes to yourself. So you're actually paying yourself and you're making money. It's wild. And so we go looking for a car because our lease is up and I find out that the lease terms have changed. They only do 3-year leases instead of 4 and 5, which makes the payment on a lease ridiculous. The car prices are now above MSRP because there's a shortage. It's 2024. And the interest rates, because the Fed raised them like 12 times, are ridiculously high. So now, like, to get a Toyota Camry lease was $700 a month. It's insane. It's more than I'm paying now for much more expensive cars. Oh, wait a minute. I got this money in my banking, in my bank policy. I got this cash sitting here. That's growing. It's protected. I could pay cash for the car, not finance it, and pay myself back. You see the magic? So it gave us like, whoa. And then once it's paid off, it's all that money is put back in our bank. So rather than giving all that money over to Toyota or Nissan or Honda, or Lexus, wait a minute, the money's coming back into my account with interest that it's my interest that I'm charging myself. It is, the more you learn about this, it has so many different things. Caring for a parent. What if you have to draw some cash out? What if you have a parent that needs a little help in an assisted living facility? They go to assisted living. Maybe it's not nursing. Maybe it's just some independent living, right? They hand over their Social Security income to the facility. A lot of them do this. They have a little bit of savings they can pay. But what if they need an extra $1,000 a month? And you're like, okay, maybe I want to help my parents. And I can take a loan out for $1,000. And maybe you don't have to pay the loans back. So you just pay the interest back. There's so much flexibility when you own this own asset. And there's so much peace of mind and security, not only to use it while you're living, but also if I were to pass away right now, my family is fine. They're more than fine. Like that's a cool feeling that I did not have when I was 40. Now, I didn't have kids then, but I shortly afterward had them, right? They're 11 now. So it was, what, 2 years? Then I'm like, but I had already started. Like the policies were set. I didn't need to go out and just jump up a $1 million policy, which... I have more than $1 million now, and I have term and whole. The way we designed this policy, it's got both running. So I have more than enough protection and peace of mind that if something happens to me, that money is tax-free. It bypasses the probate and estate process. The entire chunk of money gets sent via check to my wife if I die, and vice versa if she dies to me. If we both die, it goes into our estate and our kids, and then our guardian will pick it up. And then when they turn 18, right? But all that money is sitting there for the guardian to care for my kids. Tax-free. There's no probate. There's no taxes on a 401k. None of that stuff. 100% moves within usually 3 to 4 weeks. So when you're thinking about building your life with assets and financial instruments, there's lots of things you can do. I'm just suggesting this be a part of it. Like, this isn't all I do, but this is a big part. I have a business. I have this. Certainly I have some equity in my home, but I'm not counting on that yet because we're still living there. And so that's not really what I'm looking for. I'm looking at investing in businesses, commercial real estate I'm in, because I'm able to think differently now about different asset classes, where before all I thought about was the stock market. And I have stuff in the stock market too. It's not that I have nothing in there. I'm against it, but I don't have all my eggs in that. So if there's a crash, when there's these ups and downs, I don't even care. It doesn't matter. I have moved all of our retirement. I essentially took all of my 401k and my pension, all that stuff, and moved it out of anything that could go down in value and only put it in things that go up. And I sleep like a baby, and I don't worry about the ups and downs. Because I know, here's the last point. And if you've listened this long, this is when this clicks, when you learn about this, it's wild. We've all heard the term compound interest, right? Or compounding. I remember when I was 20 or 25, I had these little financial floppy disks, right? And you put in your money and then you have these graphs. And I'm like, holy shit, man, when I'm 65, I'm gonna be worth like $8 million. I'm only saving $100 a month, right? It's got these little things that just show this geometric, and you just gotta hang in there, John, and then see where it starts to exponentially, the curve goes up, and it's such bullshit. None of that stuff happens. Why are people still struggling? Because that isn't reality. Because the market goes up and down. That only works if you never lose money. Right? So this is where the common sense comes in. But, well, over the stock market over 100 years, John, has generated 10% average. Okay? Those models are not accurate. Prove me wrong. Because if the stock market goes up 10% in 1 year, you have $100 in the stock market. Forget the stock market, in anything. You put $100 in an asset and it goes up in value 10%, how much do you have? 110. It's worth $110, whatever the asset. If that asset then drops 10%, how much do you have? How much does it go down? It goes down 11. You have $99. The average over 2 years is zero. So the average return on that asset is zero, but yet you've lost money because losses are more destructive than gains. Because when you have a gain, the number goes up, it's a bigger number. And then when you have the same loss percentage, it's on a larger number, which means it drops more. Which is why when the market in 2008 dropped 40 and 50%, it was so devastating. It took so long for people to get back to just normal because you had to have even more gains to offset the same amount of loss. Once I learned this in my process, I'm like, wow, the key then is to have true compounding. And that's what these contracts provide. When you run an illustration, which you can get. So at some point I'm like, okay, Jeff, let's show me what it looks. Show me the numbers. And it's based on your age, right? It's based on some other things. And it's a custom policy. There's no minimum. There's no maximum. It's, hey, what do you want to do, John? What's going on? I told him my stuff. He's like, okay, let me try it. And so you're just, it's like a blueprint. Hey, what about this? What about this? So they build it and I look at it. And then I look out into the future. I'm like, how is this real, Jeff? Like it's guaranteed to be higher. Yeah, contractually. And so the compounding is legit exponential compounding because what happens is not only is it growing and it never loses money, but it's also generating return in that cash that adds a little more. And so the way I thought about it is, okay, it goes up every year a little bit, and then it's also adding a little bit to that. And so the number is greater, right? The next year it goes up the same amount, let's say, but it's more money there, so it grows even a little bit more. And then that generates a little bit more. So when you see how these policies are triggering these the dividends and the return back to the policy, you will see the magic, which is true compounding, which is will blow your mind. Then I was like, I need to put as much freaking money in this thing as I possibly can. I need to spend as much money as possible on this life policy, which is totally opposite of anything anyone's ever told me. Like, you want the cheapest life insurance policy, right? What's the price? What's the price? I'm like, I need to put as much money designed the right way, not for the agent, right? The agents that when you build these policies, the agents make less money when they're done the right way because of the riders. The riders, they get very little commission on. So you inflate the riders. You do these things that are really cool. They're all within the IRS tax code, 7706 code. So it's all legit. You can look it up and learn about it. So they design it so it's really efficient. They actually make less money, but it's the right thing to do. So with that, I am out. Listen to the rest of the sessions here. If I can help, let me know. You can connect with me on LinkedIn or wherever, millengroup.com. Thanks.